give the stage to Mr. Price to talk about the five-year budget forecast for the MMSD.
Thank you, Mr. Winston. Just a couple items of introduction. I have with me Scott Gralla, who's with PMA, and Jeff Carew is still in the audience, who's with PMA. PMA is the company we work with to do the forecast and use a model that they had developed and utilized in a number of school districts in the state of Illinois over the past number of years, and it's becoming a very accepted product in Wisconsin school districts as well. It's an advance of where we've been in the past few years, where we've attempted to do gross forecasting on very small groups of items and just push them out by a CPI or a percentage that we knew about. In other words, we knew salaries we could increase by X, benefits we could X by Y. You know, CPI on supplies and materials could be another percentage. And then we would put that together and then bring back to the board what we expected would or could be a forecast. Not very sophisticated, not very advanced, and not taking a whole lot of items into consideration. This process in this program that we use this year, as we will demonstrate, is very deep in how we used it and what it brings to the table, but it also has a lot of potential for additional uses down the road for us in our financial planning and analysis. Also with us tonight is Doug Johnson, Donna Williams, and Candy Steffener, who are the staff members who worked very closely on this project and worked with PMA to not only find and help them with the analysis piece in the background and finding the data, but when we sat down in the last couple of weeks and have gone through and asked the questions over and over, does this include, does this make sense? Does this make a logic check that we can agree to and understand? And we did that over and over again as a staff to bring us to what we felt was the best place we could be at this time doing a forecast. And that's not doing a budget. It's doing a forecast. It's laying out the possibilities and, again, not building a budget item by item, paper clip by paper clip, teacher by teacher, but in essence taking what we know, what we can assume, and then taking it forward, and again, some fairly gross numbers in pulling out where we think we will be as our gap and where we'll be as our expenditures and revenues for the next 5 years. So in to take it to the next steps, after we've gone through this process, this really becomes our touching point where we go back as we build the budget, and we, as I mentioned earlier in the meeting, we will start that process, actually have begun the process of pulling together what will be the cost to continue the same level of programs that we have in place now. And then from there, the management team will make the necessary budget cuts to bring that into a balanced budget. We feel fairly confident that when we get down to building the actual cost to continue budget, we will experience roughly the same gap that we're projecting tonight as part of our forecast. And you'll see, and I hope, come to that same level of confidence as we demonstrate again what has gone into this. So that's a little bit of background on what this is all about. I'll just go to the second slide and just talk a little bit about the parameters and a little description of the program. As the slide says, it's a very complex tool that really helps us model and look forward to what may happen in the future. I think the important part here is this is an ongoing process. You know, we bring staff and expertise to the table that quite frankly, we don't have the time to do internally. We don't have the ability to stay with this and keep it up to date, monitor and add to it, enhance it, as PMA does in bringing this product forward. And we see that as a very positive as we go into the future. The results, you know, how accurate are they? Well, we work very closely with PMA to provide them the revenue and expenditure assumptions. And I just want to walk through some of those 2 weeks ago. But I handed out another handout tonight, which takes that even a step further. It has the timeline, which is continuing. It's a live document. That timeline dates change regularly, as we had talked about a couple weeks ago. But there, in these next three pages, then are a number of the things that we talked about as we were building the model. Things that we look at. We look at the revenue limit increase. What is going to happen related to the state statutes? is there, you know, if we go forward with what we know it's on the books, this is what will happen, and that's the position we took in presenting the materials tonight. We actually took our enrollment projections that we had published last October and used those numbers to project the staffing levels for elementary, middle, and high school for each of the next 5 years. We took and assumed that student fees would not change. We assumed the state equalization aid would decrease by formula and making some assumptions within that formula. We assumed that a large number of the categorical aids would not change. We know that we have experienced some growth in interest revenue. There's some circles would think that's very positive. Some circles would think that's what brings us inflation. We're very modest in thinking our rate of return will go up 0.25% each year. Special education aid has a large impact. We project 28% return on the salaries of fringes that are associated with special ed categorical next year, and we expect that minimally to go down 1% per year for each of the following years. And another revenue we put out is unchanged. And then we did budget, which is part of the state revenues expectations this next year, $500,000 for high cost, low incidence. We've realized some of those monies, but in the last 2 years, and we hope to this year, as a result of a state superintendent fund that was allocated for that purpose. But we have actually included that as an expectation in our budget in the future. On the expenditure side, we use settlements. We use the packages that were out there. All other groups, we reflected the increase that would be consistent with the settlements that have been in place the last few years. We, in overall projections, we assume that the 10% increase for health insurance and a 5% increase in dental. Horizontal movement is not part of the settled agreements, and we factored in an amount of $400,000 each year for lane advancement for our professional teaching staff and included that within the budget. We increased our temporary salaries by a 3% factor, fringe benefits by 5%. Our staffing levels have been established, as I mentioned, per the enrollment projections, with elementary staffing going up over the next few years, high school and middle school going down. Natural gas, electricity, sewer, and water, we've been advised to use a 15% factor for each of the next 5 years for gas and 10% for electricity. That may be a little high on the electric side, but we just don't know. And as I'll highlight in a couple minutes, once you get beyond the first year, there's a lot we don't know about what's really going to happen. In water and sewer to 5%. We have also adjusted the base to include the 303 that's in the contingency that wasn't moved to utilities, but we use that again as part of our base, and that gives us a little extra little buffer in that area as well. Transportation costs, we used a factor of 7.7%, which is roughly a 3% increase in base, and then we have a fuel escalator that gives us some pause as fuel prices, particularly as diesel, have increased. We also have a factor of a very inevitable increase in our costs for the subsidy for the city transportation for both regular transportation, the Dodgers, and for our indigent transportation. In fact, since we did this, I had a meeting with the city, and our indigent costs are expected to go up between 20 and 25% each year for the next 3 years. And that's a factor that we we'll have to take a look at as we build the actual budget. Other non-salary objects, we used, as I talked about 2 weeks ago, we used the 4.1% CPI, which is the November annualized of 2005. Special education costs assumes no changes and moves everything forward. Salary savings, we anticipated $2,250,000 for next year and $2 million each subsequent year. That assumes open positions, vacancies, unscheduled retirements or leaves that we can hire at a lesser amount, and takes those savings and anticipates that as part of the budget. A couple of last things is the general fund contingency. We continue to include $650,000, but we also assume that half of that would be absorbed each year as part of the base. It would be a continuing expense that the contingency would be utilized for. That means that half of it would need to be utilized for one-time items, and the other half would be continuing. We assumed that, and we did this before retiring teachers came in. We assumed 77 based upon a five-year average, and then the replacement resulting of those resulting vacancies is step four, lane four. As of last of the 14th, we had, I believe, it was 75 retirements. So we feel pretty good about this projection. Open enrollment expenses and revenues we maintain constant. Maintenance we adjusted for the approved referendum dollars, and then Fund 80 reserve we use the same strategy for that as we did for the general fund unallocated, and that's to assume that half of that would go forward as continuing expenses. Why don't you give the feel of just kind of the assumptions, and I know that's just dealing with the one item up here is how accurate are they? This is what we utilize, and we'll post these on the web as well as all the other documents that we have before you tonight. These assumptions are constantly changing. We know that. As I mentioned with transportation with the city, we assume that it would go up considerable. I don't think we have enough in our budget to offset what we're being told. There will be an increased cost for indigent transportation. We'll need to make an adjustment when we move into the actual budgets process. They have impacts. I mean, obviously, everything we do, and that's why we spend so much staff time working with PMA to, you know, to take a look at, okay, if this happens, what? If this happens, what else? And that's part of this forecast process that helps us not only give you this five-year project or layout of a forecast, it helps us think about the factors that we will need to take into consideration as we build the actual budget. And it and gets us in the frame of mind that we we'll deal with the budget accordingly. How accurate are our enrollment projections? Our enrollment projections are very good for next year on a district-wide basis. After that, we've always said, we'll miss some grades, and we'll miss eight elementary schools high and eight elementary schools low, and the others will just go back and forth. But on a district-wide basis, we've been very, very good and feel good about that. After that, they're just guesses. And enrollment projections, that's all you can look at beyond the next year. The budget, again, this is a forecast. This is we're basing it on current budgets. And I highlight this, and I apologize that I didn't really answer Ms. Mathias' question very succinctly earlier. We didn't look at textbooks and say, what is the textbook budget going to be for the next 5 years? We took the 2005-06 budget that was filed with the Department of Public Instruction, adjusted it for those factors and those items that I just talked about, and moved it forward. So to say in this model how much is in here for textbooks, it's whatever we did last year in our budget, move forward. So that really highlights how it's a model for forecasting and not the budget. Confidence, as we went through this, we almost adjusted this because I'm not very confident about the second year. And I'm really not confident about years 3, 4, and 5 because of the, as we talked about, the variables change, the margin grows, or error grows as we go through each of the next few years' projections. And that's why we'll feel that one of the beauties of this model is we can continually work with it, we can continually update it, and we can continually improve what the response it's giving and the accuracy response in the future. So that's kind of the background of how we've got to the program.
One comment, one thing to remember as you look out 5 years, there's two state biennial budgets to come up in that five-year period of time. And, you know, those can change everything here.
Just a couple comments of how we're going to use the program. I mentioned a little bit about this. This put us in the frame of mind for doing our budget planning and actually moving into that process. We think it's good to look out. You know, the fact that 5 years from now, if you looked at where we would be, if we didn't cut any budgets, we would be over $90 million in the red in our equity because that's how much we would have overspent under revenue limits over the next 5 years. It does put that out in front of us. It helps us with trend identification. We've gone back. Some cases, we looked at 2 years of actual expenditures, and in some areas, we looked at 5 years of data. As the model grows over the next 3 years, we will have 5 years of not only what happened, we'll have what we thought was going to happen compared to what happened. And that is, will help us very, very much. It will help, also help us take a look at our financial policies. Do we have in place the policies that help us manage the district and help us move forward, or are there things that we need to change? And then the what if. It brings us tools that we can go in as a team and take a look at the assumptions. We can work with this in many ways in the future to deal with many, many different kinds of scenarios. So that's how we plan on using the program now and into the future. I'm going to ask Scott to go through a couple of the fact things, and if you want to go to the next slide and just take it from here, and I'll jump in as I can.
Thank you, Roger. Murphy's Law.
You froze up.
Can you move that a little closer?
Remote is only so good for so far. Wireless. There we go.
As Roger mentioned, we look backwards into your historical financial results for 5 years. We pull your financial history directly from DPI, and in addition to that, we take your current budget. So we have 6 years of history, and then we cast out 5 years. So we're going to look at 11 years. Current budget, fiscal year 2005-2006, is the base for projections, and in many cases is just cast forward for specific line items. But as you'll see, however, the key areas, enrollment and adjustment of FTEs of your most costly areas, your teaching staff, do actually get adjusted by enrollment. So, we also look at your enrollment history and the projections. Student-teacher ratios directly impact your financial outcome, your financial projections. We've loaded your current salary schedule for your teachers, your teaching staff, into this model. We also have next year's salary schedule. That is, as I understand, a settled schedule. We look at your benefits. We also look at your district's equalized valuation, both historical and then look forward at what we think will happen. We look back a couple years at revenue limit calculations that are filed with DPI, and we also plug them into the next 5 years. I'll show you how the revenue limit and general state aid is calculated out through 2011. So every district is a little bit different in how we approach this presentation. Some like to build up and work through the model, and then we get to the number, but we're going to start with the number and then go back and show how we developed it. Okay, looking at 2006-2007, we're going to move right forward. You can see that revenues are growing at 2.14%. On the other hand, expenditures are increasing by 4.94%. Our expenditures are outpacing our revenues. Thus, the $7.9 million gap that we've talked about before. Looking forward into future years, the key assumption is that nothing is done. If we knew nothing to address the $7.9 million deficit, it simply compounds itself out into future years. So we can come back to this a little bit later. At this point, I'd like to jump over to our model and start to get you familiar with how these numbers were built. Okay, we're going to start with enrollment because this model is very, very enrollment driven. As you can see, we have on the left-hand side here all your grade levels, and then going across horizontally your fiscal years 2002, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then projections out into the future. Right now, we're looking at just resident students in the district. The model does have the capability of looking at open enrollment students, in, out, tuition waiver, and so forth. But right now, what I've got this summarized to show is just your resident students. And you can see next year we're looking at a decline of 151 students. Scrolling down a little bit, I'm going to enlarge that a little and so we can get it on the screen. We're also looking at your certified teaching staff. by grade level, and then within the grades, what they're actually doing. In the classroom, K-5, 687.56 FTEs. Other librarians, nurses, other staff that aren't actually in the classroom, and then special ed teaching staff also. We have it for the middle school, the high school, and then we have some district positions and then some fixed positions. In total right now, the district has 2,485 FTEs. We simply back into a student-to-teacher ratio in those same categories again and come up with, by level, each of those ratios. K-5 in the classroom, again, this is not class ratios. It's certified teaching staff to students. 15.79 in K-5, 17.14 in the middle school, and so forth. Then looking at the enrollment changes, we look at the impact and change in FTEs by year. So we can see we're going to grow in 2007 at the elementary level. We're going to decrease slightly at the secondary levels. Try to get that all on one screen. Okay. We're going to lose 1.99 FTEs in 2006-2007. Okay. What I'm going to do now is roll over to our salaries portion of the model and show how the changing FTEs are reflected in this area. What we're looking at right now is the 2005-2006, the current salary schedule by track. I'm going to move over a little bit. BA1 salaries, FTEs by step or year of experience in the district, right on through your track 6, and then your district also does have some track half steppers, as we call it in the business. I guess it would be a half level in yours. So we know right now that here's again are your 2,485 FTEs. And at their current salary schedules rates, there's your $121.885 million. As Roger mentioned before, horizontal movement is reflected by this number, lane change cost. Or in your district, it would be track change cost. We also look at retirements and where will those retirements occur. We looked at, or we're projecting 77 total retirements, and we've taken them from the salary schedule, step 22, 23, 24, and track 6 up in this area. So we're going to pull them from here. As you'll see, this schedule is built so that each successive year follows below the previous year. And I'm going to just zoom out to give you just a good overview. They're built one on top of each other and all the way out through 2011. Now, I'm getting you dizzy. I apologize for that. But
this is one of the major enhancements for what we were incapable of doing in our forecasting models that we've used in the past. We did not have the capacity to take the staff that were placed on these schedules, retire, hire, and advance them through in each of the next 5 years and come up with what the cost would be. And again, factoring in how much, you know, there's an assumption made of how much the steps are going to, the base is going to increase. That's all part of the model. This really enhanced us. Where we in the past have done salary saving estimates, including retirees, we were able to only concentrate salary savings on vacant positions and other things that could happen during the course of the year. We really reflect what we anticipate in salary savings from retirements in this schedule.
It's removing FTEs from the most expensive cells in this model and replacing them with the new teachers and the less costly cells. For instance, if we look backwards, here's a track 1 of BA0 at 4. If we look backward, where did that come from? It's being fed from, you can see from the previous year, we simply stepped, they were at a step 3 or level 3. Now they've moved down to a level 4. So all your FTEs will step through the model. They'll receive their salary increase each year. Also, the retirements, we have chosen to hire the new FTEs at track 4, lane or self
SELFOR?
SELFOR.
A 4-4. And if we look backwards at where those came from, you can see it's pulling, sorry with all the lines, but where it's pulling from, those FTEs that we were removing from the previous year. So they are actually coming out of the schedule. They're being replaced there, but they're coming out. We were pulling them from track 6 right here. And you can see we no longer have any FTEs in that area. So I'm going to jump back, change gears a little bit here, and just show you some of the revenue assumptions that Roger talked about earlier. Just to quickly, not to go through them, but to give you an idea of the number of assumptions we actually work with. We look at your district's equalized valuation. We look at historical numbers, and we project into the future based on those historical values for both our fall and spring valuations, spring for state aid. We look at CPI. Many areas are affected by that variable. As we talked about before, this budget will actually, or this model is spanning two state budgets, so it's important to look at what's happening at the state level. Here we're looking at primary and secondary and tertiary guarantees. We can look at the changes by year historically, and from there we can go forward and project what we think will happen, if anybody can project
that.
If anybody can project at the state level.
Yeah.
So, investment rates, student fees, textbook percent increases, open enrollment, library aid, census, all variables that go into your revenues. Your per pupil increase in the revenue limit, very important. Always an item for discussion when the state budget is being built. We also look at other funds and how they've been levied. Other funds besides your general fund. We're looking at all your district's funds. Both debt service funds, 38-39, community service fund, 80, and your food service fund 50. On the expenditure side, we start out with salaries, and again, not to confuse this with total package, this is just salaries, by group, teachers, administrators, custodial, clerical, aides, other. And if we don't specifically have them mentioned there, we've included them with the group that's closest to them. We look at what we project or what we anticipate their increases to be by fiscal year into the future. We look at objects of expenditure, major objects, for each fiscal year going forward. Within the purchase services, object 300s, we look closer at utilities, especially this year is very important, so we have the ability to adjust those percentages in more detail than simply at the 300 level. Going hand in hand with that would be your transportation. A good item to have that ability this year, especially with fuel costs going up. Look at it for all of the funds, special ed fund, fund 27. As we mentioned before, we look at what we anticipate aid to be in the future years. We've gone at 28% the current funding levels and decreased it by 1% for each fiscal year into the future. And you can see it just flows into the other funds, very, very similar. On the benefit side, we look at your WRS rate, your Wisconsin Retirement System rates, FICA, Medicare, dental and other insurance, and health insurance. So, by fund, we look at, as I mentioned before, historical results. And I think the question that was asked before about some of the labels that it was on, that are on the graph, this would answer that. And I do apologize for some of those. They are intended to align directly with the WOOFER or the Wisconsin Uniform Financial Accounting Requirements, the WESIS, and for old-time financial people. But the state.
Did you look at me when you did that?
I'm sorry, Roger. I thought you wrote the book. We have the ability when we look at historical results. To work with the district in analyzing the data and looking at trends. The computer went to sleep while we were waiting for the last presentations, and and our little macros aren't working here, but you can get a feel for the level of detail that we're looking at both historically, current year budget, and then projecting out into future years. If we look at expenditures, for instance, you can see this comes from salary and benefits. It's not as simple as some other models may do, cast forward of the previous year by a percentage. It flows directly or is pulled directly from your staffing projections that we worked on earlier that are fed from the enrollment projections.
If I could just interject here, this is an example where the summary that we were referring to earlier and answer the questions on that was in the packet, if you take the undifferentiated curriculum, you see that it's a breakdown. My pointer's not working. From there, includes salary, benefits, purchase services, non-capital objects, which would include textbooks and supplies and materials, capital objects and equipment. So that's all part of what is undifferentiated curriculum, just as it is regular curriculum, vocational curriculum, et cetera. If you want to scale go down to those other areas.
The support services.
The support services area.
We call it 200,000.
So this gives you an idea. We break down here what comes into, what is pupil services, what's included, the social work, the guidance, the health, psychological services, speech, attendance, other pupil services.
Yes. So, and some of those titles we're pulling other.
Yep. And then you move into, again, this just keep further, this is the breakdowns that are part of that. So there's a lot of breakdowns. It's all pulling information right from the annual report or fall report for the budget that we filed with the Department of Public Instruction. That's where these numbers came from.
And as you can see, we do this for each fund, a revenue and expenditure, in detail for 11 years. We're looking back 5. We have our current year budget and looking forward in 5 years. We have a reporting module, and you've seen a couple of the outputs, as we call them, our reports in your board packet or committee packet. We were looking at the Fund 10 projections right here. We have the ability to display that graphically also. Projected revenue expenditures by fiscal year, and then projected fund balance by fiscal year. Expenditures by function, and expenditures by object. We have this available for every fund, and it's just a matter of what your district chooses to use for outputs to share with the community and the board. And that because this is written in Excel, it's very, very modifiable and easily changed. We can do a lot very easily, quickly for your district.
Let me make one comment so that everybody remembers that what the projections show is what would happen if we did nothing. If we kept doing everything we're doing right now, for the next 5 years under revenue caps, that's what the projection shows. Obviously, we'll come back with a balanced budget this year that will eliminate that $7.9 million. If you look at next year's projection, we'll be starting at zero and rolling out 5 years. What would happen if we didn't do anything? The other way to look at it is, if you look at this, if everything were to hold true to what our assumptions are, is that we would make a $7.9 million cut this year, an additional, if I remember, like $6 million the next year.
Closer than 8 or 9.
You can look at what each of the cuts would be each year. So when we eliminate the $7.9 million, it'll show you what the next cut is for the next year, if the assumptions were true. I want to be sure everybody didn't get confused by that.
Why is it only $5 million from 2008 to 2009? Is there a reason why it's...
We start growing.
Enrollment increase.
And we start seeing some impact from 2008. We expect to actually increase in enrollment. And that gives us some benefits so that our gap will not be as much.
Do you know how, in terms of the enrollment, how much does it increase from...
Sure. We've got the enrollment projections in there that show that.
I think the first year that it starts going up goes up by 168, I think.
Just we need it real quick.
To, you said 168?
168, I think, is what I remember. Approximately.
Yeah.
Actually, we can show...
We can show you exactly what we used for the projections.
We show exactly 168, just like Art said.
Approximately 168.
We're projecting down, and then we go up 118, and then we 183, and then another 341. With the kindergarten in the live burst 5 years ago, in the previous couple of years, those kindergarten numbers are really going to grow, and that'll feed through the elementary in the course of the next 4, 5, 6 years.
Mr. Keith,
I just want to make sure I'm reading these numbers right, and I apologize to anybody for my errors in math. I don't have my calculator here. My last course in college was general math, and I got a D in it, and my dad said, what did that stand for? And I said, diploma. At any rate, it was $7.9 million in 2007, $8.1 million in 2008, $5.1 million in 2009. I'm getting close.
It.
I'm in the ballpark.
You got
right?
It.
2010, $7.3 million cut. 2011, $8.9 million cut.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Remember that we're only real confident of next year.
Right, right. Ms. Cubs, you have a question. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have a couple of different questions. On the one of the charts where you break it out between undifferentiated curriculum, regular curriculum, vocational curriculum, can you explain to me what all those are?
What the different categories are?
Yeah, what's undifferentiated and what's regular?
We have a whole book of what those definitions are and what's included. I'll give you a rough breakdown because I was asked the same question in management team earlier today. Undifferentiated curriculum are those curricular areas that are not defined by a subject matter. And it's not some districts use it only for elementary schools. Some use it for those things that are not that are in a combined classroom and taught by a teacher that's not a math teacher, it's not a science teacher, it's not an English teacher. If it's specific to those curricular areas, they are differentiated curriculum and they fall under the regular area. So you would have within regular curriculum, you would have math, you would have science, you would have English, you would have the specialty areas that are part of regular curriculum. To go take it a step further, if it's vocational curriculum specific to what used to be the aidable part, and you had to keep track of that a lot more detail when there was money there, you kept those in the vocational curriculum area in a separate set of accounts. Physical education and driver's education were always separated. Most of these are established by the accounting codes that date back to, as Scott said, the book that we wrote in 1978 called WESIS, the Wisconsin Educational. I can't even remember what it all is now, but schools and secondary accounting, and it just prescribes how you keep track of things. You move down into the other areas. Some of these labels, Scott will admit, came from Illinois, and they don't exactly coincide with ours. But operations is going to be, and you have the...
We jump into the
shell and look at it. So operations is going to be, that's what I thought it would be, business.
Yeah, when we're looking at the 200,000 functions.
Yeah, it's going to break it down into business administration. It's going to take, it's going to bring the central services part in there. And those are going to be the subs that make up those areas within support services.
So the numbers on the left are your accounting numbers?
Those are part of our accounting numbers. Those are things, 10 is the fund, the 2-9, the first next six digits are going to be the what we call the function number. And then there's another set of numbers to define whether or not it's salary, employee benefits, employee purchase services, et cetera. And then we have not included within this analysis is another set of numbers that talks about programs, another one that talks about projects, another set of numbers that talks about location. So this is just part of our accounting code that helps us break down and keep track of transactions.
But everything is included
in one of those categories.
Because we have to do multiple kinds of reports for different things. There are some reports that we do by function, which is what you see here. There are other reports that we have to do by object, which would be things like purchase services, capital equipment, those kind of things. It'll be the same numbers, just rearranged into the object codes, depending on what that specific report is for. DPI has a reporting structure we have to provide. then we may have to do a different one for special ed. We have to do a different one for the federal government. And so our accounting structure has to be able to account for rearranging the numbers to fit those reports.
This follows the DPI, or how we would report them. But we have the debate over discussion on this. We trying to get to the point of giving information that's useful to the most people. Is that report based upon function? Is it based upon objects as a primary? We've chosen in the past number of years to do departments. And say our breakdown is on department basis, which is our organization part of the code. The last 2 years, we presented our budget both by organization and then by fund and function. Is that enough information? Within all those, we try to break it down by object. Is that enough information? We don't, it's tough for us, and we've had difficulty meeting everyone's needs for information to define how best to present the reports.
And you're talking about the budget report
when it comes
to us.
Yep.
And I mean, because I agree, now that you've got this great model that shows both the historic and the future, and we're going to ask for changes and as we make budget modifications, sure would be a lot nicer to plug it in this model and see what the end result is than having to make estimates. I mean, that came up last year when you have to make estimates if you're cutting positions, which positions get cut, what's the impact of that.
That's what we can use, part of the things we can use it for forecasting.
I mean, has there been any thought about using this? I don't know whether we want to do that or not, but using this presentation as the model for budgeting off of or based on the budget book you're going to give us as opposed to what we've been doing. I mean, it's difficult to go back.
No, it's not difficult because...
For me, I'm saying it's difficult to go from one to the other.
Right, I agree.
To compare the two.
And we're very open to looking at how best to present. I mean, this is what, when we get all done with the budget, and if we work with the public, work with the board, work as a staff, this is how we present to the state. This is the format right as you have in front of you. There are other ways, for managing the budget, we feel very strongly that you have to manage by organization. So that's part of how our structure is critical for us, so that we know who's controlling the dollars, who has responsibility.
We manage by object within organization. So if I'm looking at my budget, I'm looking at my budget with purchase services delineated, capital improvements, capital outlay delineated, those kind of things, which is actually the way we cut the budget, and which is the way you look at cutting the budget. That's kind of one of the dilemmas in terms of how you...
So purchase services that would be under arts control now would
just
show up, just for your department, would all show up in one group on this?
Not necessarily, no, because an example, purchase services for me is... I'm going to have areas within food service. I'm going to have areas within technology, which is a different set of functions, maintenance and operations. I'm going to have areas within the accounting area. I'm going to have printing. All those are different series are going to show up in different places throughout here. So as I have purchase services for each of those areas, there are different parts of the budget, but I manage those as my department.
Because that was a difficulty last year when we'd see this huge purchase services number under business services and we'd say to you, well, what is that? And you go, oh, well, it's transportation and it's food and it's all whatever.
Yep.
This would make it easier for us to know what it was in some aspects, I suppose.
Aspect.
It makes it more difficult perhaps in others.
As reporting or as a tool to show you what it is, it's not as easy to get at cutting a program or cutting something or cutting a function. This really doesn't get at it because you cut within what you manage, which crosses many areas. So if I cut within something within technology, it's going to be, most of that's going to be within technology, but it's also something I manage. But if you just did it with this model, you wouldn't see what department is affected. You only see that function. And I don't think it's that where you wanted to, where the board wanted to go or be. I'm not sure. I think... It's probably a combination of everything, all those together. Is this another set of, a way to present the numbers? In addition to department, we've done that a little bit in the past. In fact, it's the second presentation in the board packet.
Well, I think
We actually do one. There's a one pager in the budget book that is by function.
Right.
That you see here. That takes the same dollars and puts it as functions, and then there's another page. It's a one pager that puts it in departments with broad objects.
Right.
But I remember looking and trying to compare the two and saying, why the huge discrepancy between this column and that column? And then the explanation just makes it worse, really, rather than better. When you're talking about a transparent budget, it's because you have too much information, sometimes it's not clear how the one relates to the other. So I do think we should think about how it should be presented.
We're becoming aware that transparent does not mean information or a quantity. But nobody
clarity.
Yet has defined what transparent is.
Well, understandable. Maybe.
People have to make decisions based on it. It's kind of my view. Could I ask you, do you have the same set of analyses of revenue, expenditures, and so forth for Fund 80?
Yes.
Okay. Can we, I don't want to necessarily want to see it here. I'd like to have a copy that I could actually read. Okay?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, you can see right along the bottom here we have all the funds that we're right at the limit of how long this battery will catch.
Yeah,
so,
I'm asking for a copy.
Yep, we can get that for you. Do you actually want to see the report here?
Yeah, I'd like to see the counterpart to this one.
Well, we might. I'm sorry. We'll just show it quickly up here.
I'd like to see it. I mean, it'd be fine if we see it up here, but I'd like to have it printed out for us in the same way that the revenue analysis, expenditure analysis, history summary, you know, these five pages have been presented tonight for Fund 10. I'd like to see it for Fund 80.
Okay. That's the page we'll print out.
Yeah.
Because it does, as I mentioned, it takes the reserve and reallocates that back in so you don't get a straight line 4% to 4% increase, because you're adding programs every year under the scenario, under the assumptions I gave you. That doesn't have to happen, but if that happened, this is what would take place.
Okay. Is that it for your presentation right there?
We more than have gone past the 7 o'clock time that we were given.
There is a two-hour version of this.
The chair would like to recognize the lateness of this committee, but again, thank you very much. And want to apologize to Ms. Kubzus, partnership committee, for taking up the time. But again, I do believe that this is very important to look at the forecast at least 5 years out. Ms. Kubzus, I would like to ask, though, and I think Carol and I have had this discussion as well in terms of how the budget is presented. Now, is that something that you'd like to, for this committee to grapple with a little bit, or would you like to, you know, kind of come up with some recommendations along with Ms. Carstensen, or board members chime in as well?
I would like to have a chance to talk about it, and whether it's with whoever's interested. I mean, if it's a bigger group that's interested in how it's presented, I am. I think lots of the information is useful. I think probably some of it I didn't necessarily use as much and could maybe simplify some of the documents. But it's really interesting to see this and maybe now looking at this again saying, is this closer to what would help us see those trends than what we had last year? I think I really need to go back to last year's document and compare, but
I need more words and less numbers myself.
And obviously there's seven of us here. We probably take things differently here and there, but then we also have a community that sees things differently as well, and that's where we get that transparency.
200,000 different ways.
Right. Yeah, we know that. We know that. However, though, there should be a way that the elected board wants to see the document and wants to see it presented, and I guess I'm more concerned with that because we're the elected board, and again, want to make sure that board members have their questions answered and again presented in a way that's palatable for the board to see and answer questions or anything like that. Carol and then Mr. Keyes.
I think maybe we need to look at it in two parts. I think the overview, which this year ended up in the middle of the book, we need to look at that and see whether there are all the pieces of information that we think ought to be there. And then I think that the issue is, as we look at each of the department budgets, what is it we need to know? And how is it going to be displayed, that sort of thing. And I think we may want to talk about that and make sure that we come to some kind of agreement about what it involves and what it shows us.
Well, I guess this question is addressed to you and Carol simultaneously. Then would you want this done in the committee structure first, a decision made, or would you want it done as the general board? Because I just heard you, solicit the advice and guidance of the other board members, too. I can go either way. I'm just curious what you guys want.
Well, I want to make sure that Mr. Robards, Mr. Vang, Mr. Lopez, Ms. Carson, of course, all have an opportunity to weigh in. So I guess I'd almost say that this might be better as a board, an entire board exercise, just because I think that it's very important that we're all comfortable with this. If it starts in the committee, my fear is that everyone doesn't. Although we're all here, we might not be able to make a motion. Someone might feel kind of left out of the process. And again, I think it's just really important that, this is one of the major things that we do as an elected body, and I think this is something that would be appropriate as a whole board exercise. Although we're all seven individuals, we might want to see seven different things in the budget. I do think that it would probably be in the best interest to do something together.
One thing that I really noticed last year is that there's an incredible amount of work that goes into that budget document.
Yeah.
And if we're not taking advantage of some of that work, I don't want to put staff to the effort of putting some of that together. So that's part of it, is really saying, okay, this we need, this we don't need, so don't spend your time on this. It may be that after discussing it, we decide we need everything. I didn't feel that way, but other people may have, the things I thought were important, other people might not. But that's really part of it, is to simplify what we ask staff to do if we decide that it's not valuable to us.
Superintendent.
Yeah, we really have capability now that we've never had before, and we can present the information to you in almost any form. So for us, the real issue is, what do you need to make the decisions you need to make? And then we can present that, and what we do as a budget overview or something for the public may be a different kind of format, even than what you use as a working document. We can do that. We now have a lot of capability in terms of how we can structure things. And so the real issue, I think, for the board, and then what we want to serve, is what information do you need to make decisions that you have to make about approving a final budget? And then we could get that to you. The one caution I'd say is that it ought to be, however you work it out, needs to be a consensus, because you need to be talking about the same things as you're talking
right
to each other.
Right, absolutely.
Just on timeline, I put the calendar. We go to budget printing on April 17th. We have already begun. We've already gone through the outline. We've divvied up the responsibilities, the work. And that's okay. Most of that is accumulating information. Most of it's pulling things together, writing reports, getting the words written to describe the different departments, the different programs. A lot of that we're going to have to do anyway, and no matter what format it is that we present. But just if there's a change in direction of significant nature, sooner than later would be helpful.
I just want to take a second. I would just like to, I'll be off the board by the time you really get into the heavy discussions of this. But whatever decision the seven board members reach either by consensus or by a number or vote, if it comes to that, and of course there's no way to predict how that's going to turn out, I would hope that the board stays with that course, whatever that happens to be, in order to take, as you've suggested, the stress and the time off the staff who is preparing this and not change the debate in midstream or grousing because you didn't get things your way. That's what majority votes are for, and once you win or once you lose, you get on with the next piece of business at hand, and you live with it, and you come out united. So I would really strongly encourage you to live with the decision of the majority and give it your full support. After all, we have a staff that's working very hard at it. We have a community that wants to know the information, and if people are constantly changing the terms of the debate or the definitions of things, it becomes, horrendous in terms of being able to communicate. So that's just a general thing. That's all. Thank you. Ms. Kubza?
When you're working on the budget as your management team and making cuts, and I know you're probably not there yet, but and seeing the impact that it's having and whether you're getting close to that $7.9 million, are you going to plug it back into that formula?
We move on to actually building a budget, right? Which takes it now, or we have to build the current budget, the cost to continue, which is item by item, line by line, all 35,000 line items. We have to do that because that's part of how we manage, in the future. So we'll begin and do that, and it'll come out close to what we've already projected. Because of the detail we put into the forecast, we feel fairly comfortable with that. And then what we do is then we apply our cuts against that to give you a balanced budget. So you'll see the cost of continue budget, and then you'll see the balanced budget and what's in between are the cuts we would be recommending or bringing forward.
But we can print it out.
We can print it out this week.
We can print it out.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, when you're checking your work and checking out whether your cuts are coming close to the numbers, whether you're going to be using that or you're going to be using something else. Because when you were talking about this model using actual salary cost as opposed to the models you were using last year, with estimate costs.
This takes a number that's in a cell.
Yeah.
When we build the budget, we take a person and what their salary is on February 20th and bring that into the current and actually take that individual and move them forward, which is a lot more accurate. And the retirements that come in this week that maybe go beyond the 77. Now we have to, we assume of those 77 retirees, the gap between retirement and hire back is X amount. Well, we actually will know who's retired and actually take that into consideration and the cost to continue. So the next step is even more detailed.
And that's a consequence of our new technology as much as
we were not able to do that before last year. And we learned that process last year, and we're already geared up for that and building our cost to continue budget.
Okay.
Any other questions? I just want to take the opportunity to thank the staff for their hard work and effort and energy and all this as well. Obviously, Roger, you have some good people that are working really hard in your department, and obviously gentlemen out there who came up and presented. Obviously, it was a very good thing as well. So I just wanted to recognize these folks that are working hard behind the scenes to make sure that we have the information that we do. So
I appreciate that, Johnny, because they are very, very high-level staff, and I appreciate them also.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
Okay.
Same here. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, that almost wraps it up here. There is no other business except
to adjourn.
Well, wait a minute. Except to go to the Sable Flames dance this Saturday.
Oh,
and then we will have an adjournment. So do we have a motion to adjourn?
So move.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Ayes have it. And hopefully Clarence Sherrod won't get too upset. I see him. I will report to your office tomorrow morning, Mr. Sherrod.
Question?
We don't defend you if you're operating.
We're missing both of our community representatives.